John Smoltz has joined us on Sports Byline USA. We're talking about his book, one of the best books I think I've read from an athlete, because it is so candid, so honest, and so insightful. It's called Starting and Closing, Perseverance, Faith, and One More Year. John, you mentioned a little bit earlier in the interview about how fortunate you were to be in the Atlanta Braves organization. I would assume that was an early break for you. The other one was the fact that Bobby Cox was the manager of that team and how he affected your career. Am I correct in that observation?
Oh, absolutely. I owe so much to that man and his loyalty and patience and really his leadership. You know, he made the trade for me, stuck his neck out, traded a veteran guy. And so for a wild, young, prominent, you know, up-and-coming person that nobody knew anything about, and then certainly started off rocky, and then his ability, as I mentioned, in 1991 to stick with me in the rotation was huge. I'll never forget it. He saw something that other people didn't see based on statistics, and I was able, the rest was history. So it's the reason I stayed for so long in Atlanta. I had opportunity to make a lot more money somewhere else, but I wouldn't have done anything different had I had a chance to do it all over again.
How would you describe his managing style?
It's one of commanding respect without demanding it. I think there's a leadership skill that he had, maybe even that he didn't even know he had, that inspired his players over 162 games to give their best. He had three simple rules: wear your hat right, no music in the clubhouse, and play hard. Show up on time and play hard. He took bullets for his players when every player knows there were certain players that deserved to be criticized. But he didn't do it, and he gave instilled confidence in you when you didn't think you had it. He simplified the game. He adjusted to the different times and players that he was given, and just the ultimate guy that he wore spikes. He fought for his players. He got thrown out for his players. And I think when you hear the term, it's said loosely sometimes in sports, players manager, he defines it. Everything else that might be said about another type coach or player, they're just second in line behind Bobby when it comes to that statement.
I always felt from watching him from the outside that the thing that he did, as well as knowing the game of baseball, John, was that he kept everything in the clubhouse and on the team at a pretty even keel so that things did not spike up or down too badly. Am I correct in that observation as well?
Absolutely. If you just think about that one rule, no music in the clubhouse, that could seem petty to a lot of people. But that allowed personalities to not flare up. That allowed no dissension. He said, you got headphones, wear your headphones. Music is a personal choice and personal taste. We're not going to get into any issues. We had a boring clubhouse when it came to dissension for that reason. So a lot of writers maybe thought our team was boring. But we won that way, and we had guys that knew what he expected. We made sure that it happened, and if those players couldn't adhere to that, they were not with the Atlanta Braves very long.
You also was on a pitching staff with Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine, and I thought the three of you probably motivated each other, and that collectively the way you pitched was probably a benefit for each and every one of you.
Yeah, well, our personalities had to be one where if it wasn't that way, you were going to get embarrassed and humiliated. If your ego needed to be fed, this was the wrong staff to be on. I pitched with two of the greatest pitchers in the game. I was nowhere near the same type pitcher that they were. But the fact is, I, in my own right, delivered moments that they maybe not were able to, and vice versa. And so they're 300 perennial winners and Hall of Famers, where I was maybe more the stuff guy and delivered at times where we all felt the self-worth of a staff together. We fed off each other. We played golf. We just truly enjoyed pushing each other to the max and in a good and competitive and fun way.
You know, when I think back to 2001, and that is, of course, when you made the move to go to the bullpen, the one thing I wondered is, and I know Dennis Eckersley because he was on the Oakland A's, and we would talk a good long time about the transition he made as well. I wondered how you would handle it from an ego personality standpoint, because as you've already pointed out, John, you know, you're a guy that pushes. You're not afraid of the spotlight. You want to have that ball in your hand, and yet you have to give up a little bit something of your ego when they say, well, we don't want you to be a starter. We want you to go into the bullpen. Tell me a little bit about 2001 and how you worked through it to get yourself comfortable about being a reliever.
Well, it was tough. I mean, I'm the ultimate team guy, and they really believed or tried to impress upon me that this was the best thing for the team. So I said, okay, I mean, for me to stay in Atlanta, those choices were limited. I was going to have to be in the bullpen. And what was ironic about the story I talk in the book is that Bobby never wanted me to be that guy. He wanted me to be a starter. And when I was having some physical problems, I decided I would go to the minor leagues and at least help the team down the stretch in the bullpen. He was not favor for it. But I said, Bobby, there's no choices. I'm going to do it. And I went from mop-up duty to actually becoming the closer at the end of the year. Well, I think the organization loved that idea so much that they saw a couple opportunities, both through maybe some financial reasons and the fact that it would make us better to be in the bullpen. Well, I know there's probably 15 guys in my category that have the same capacity to do what I did, and I don't think 14 of them would have done it. And the reason is, for all the things you just mentioned, 14 straight years of being a pretty good starter, comfortable, structure that I love, and the fact that there were no reasons to not start. I did embrace it. I did have to learn at the moment on the job. It was difficult, probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And after 3 years and not winning one playoff series, we came to the understanding that for me to be back in a starting capacity would make our team better. It ultimately did not change anything other than, I guess, prove to people that you can do whatever you set your mind to. And when you believe in yourself, certainly things are attainable that in the history of the game were never probable.
What is the difference in the mindset of a closer or a reliever as compared to that of a starter?
Well, see if this analogy makes sense. I said this also in the book. You know, if you're driving a car and you're going to work and you take your time and warm it up and drive the speed limit or close to it, that's starting. You just know that that's going to happen every day. And then all of a sudden you get in your car, you rev it up to about 80, 90, and you get there as fast as you can at a hectic pace. That's closing. The atmosphere, the adrenaline, the rush is not even close. There's so much of that that you don't get as a starter. It's a buildup. It's knowing every 5 days what you're going to do. It's the structure of knowing you can work out, you can run, you do all those things. It's the unknown for the closer. And you have to have a really bad memory. Nothing was worse in my professional career than blowing a save versus losing a game. And I knew how hard a starter worked to get in position for a win. And I wanted to do my darndest to not ever allow them to blow that game for them.
I also wondered about the fact that the adage is KISS, keep it simple, stupid, but yet you were a guy that was famous for being an endless tinkerer with your delivery. Did you try to keep it simple, or were you somebody always trying to reinvent yourself to some degree to get better?
Well, the big thing that most people didn't understand during the course of my career and why I got tabbed with some of those things is I dealt with so many different injuries. The only choice to keep pitching was to tinker, was to find an arm slot that would work. The one thing that I did not do or change when I was a closer is I did not lose my thinking of pitching. I didn't become a thrower. I didn't become a guy that just threw 95 to 98. I pitched, and I used the edge that was given to me based upon 14 years of starting, that when I walked in the ninth, I knew the hitters didn't want to get deep in the count. I knew they wanted to get after it quick. And one way or another, this was my theory. We're going to save the game quick or lose it quick.
We've got about 2.5 minutes left, but I want to go to the beginning of the book and the dedication because it struck me. You say, to my wife, Catherine, who helped me get through the final year of my career, without her love and support, I'm not sure I could have made it. Tell me about that final year.
Well, that truly was not the typical year that you're thinking of when you think about your last year. Now, at that point, I'd had surgery. I'd endured a change from an organization I dearly loved, one that did not end the way you would have wanted it to. It was very tough going somewhere new. I'm a guy that loves structure. I love the knowing where I'm going. We got lost a lot. We were entering a city that we'd never been, an organization, a historic organization. The anxiety, all some of those mistakes that I made when I was younger, I started repeating. And without her support, it would have been impossible to deal on your own. This is a point in your career where pride and ego would take over, and there's some very tough moments physically, and tough moments when I got released, things that a baseball player never wants to think of. I know it seemed painful. I know it didn't look. I really did, over the course of my career, have a blast. And there was a lot of tough moments in that. And I think you remember those anytime you climb to a level or reach a level that, had you not gone through, you probably would have appreciated it.
John, when you sit back and have a moment to think about your career and your life, and it may not even be a baseball moment that you think of, what is that thing that's kind of blazed into your mind, into your psyche a little bit?
You know what it is? It's amazing that an accordion player out of Michigan from a small family, has had the opportunity to have dinner with the president twice, play golf numerous rounds with Tiger Woods, meet incredible people, have impacts that I never thought I would have and influences, start a school, do so many great things that the uniform afforded me the opportunity to do. I just can't believe it. I just, you got to understand where I came from and the family structure I was under, and I loved it all. Small town in Lansing, it's pretty incredible. And I don't think too highly of myself. I'm enamored when I go into a locker room of an NBA team. It's just stuff that I've cherished as a fan. I'm a diehard fan of certain teams. So those things, when I think back, I'm going, how's this possible? I mean, there's just no way. And it's all been an incredible ride.
John, I want to thank you very much. I hope we can stay in touch. And if you find yourself in San Francisco, come on in the studio. Let's sit down and talk a little bit more. It's a fantastic book. We're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline USA Book Corner. It's called Starting and Closing, Perseverance, Faith, and One More Year. And thank you very much for joining us here on Sports Byline. Take care, John.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
John Smoltz with us, 22 seasons, 21 of those with the Atlanta Braves. He won the Cy Young, and also he picked up a championship in 1995 with the Atlanta Braves. And as I pointed out earlier, only pitcher to compile 200 wins and 150 saves. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.